Every now and then I think back on things that I have done in my life that I wish I could. You say to yourself, well, I wish I could go back and not do that or do it differently. And all of us have gotten in trouble growing up or after we were grown up. Most of the time for me, as I think all of you who know me would say, yep, that's what I would say, that I've gotten myself in trouble with my tongue. I've gotten myself in trouble with my wife over something that I said or with somebody else. And 99% of the time it's something I thought was humorous. Lucretia is generous. She says that over 95% of the time that the things that I say that are I think are humorous are not offensive. So that leaves something under 5% of the time that I say that I thought it was humorous, that it was definitely offensive. You'd be amazed at how much I think of that is humorous to me that I don't say. You probably would find that surprising, but there's a lot that I think is humorous that I don't say. And no need for me to give examples. Although I did give an example over in Jackson. But anyway, I thought it. There are more scriptures in some ways about the tongue in the Bible. You could give sermon after sermon after sermon after sermon. You could give an entire sermon just out of the book of Proverbs about the tongue. And many other places. So I haven't spoken about the tongue in quite a while. I was really thinking about speaking on something else today, but I never really got the time to work on it. And I thought, well, I gave this sermon last week in Jackson and the week before up in Bowling Green, and maybe God would like for me to give it here. Some of these verses are verses that you and I have heard so many times, but we need to be reminded of them. And if you will turn with me to Matthew 12, verses 34 to 37. Matthew 12, verse 34 to 37. There's some things here. There's a verse here that is one of the most frightening verses in the Bible, at least to me. It's really verses 36 and 37, but we'll start in verse 34. Brood of vipers. Well, there's a good way to start off a message. I could do that here, but then I'm not Jesus, so maybe I shouldn't be calling people brood of vipers. He was God. He created us. He certainly can do that. How can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. And here's what's really frightening. But I say to you that for every idle word, idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. Not something that we might say on the witness stand. Now that, we might hear that too. Not just those things, I should say, that we might say on the witness stand. Or from a podium. Or as a serious announcement or letter that we might write. But we're just shooting the breeze with somebody. We're on the phone. Or we're just, you could do texting. We're just texting. You know, just sending little goofy texts. Or maybe some of you are on Twitter, and it's just a little goofy Twitter that you put out, or something you put on your Facebook, or something that you wouldn't put on writing anywhere, but you're with a good friend, and you guys are just laughing and joking. Everything you and I say, we will give account for. Everything. Then he goes on to say this, "But I say to you that forever," in verse 37, "for by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." There's an example of that right here in the Bible, and it's in Luke 19, verses 20 through 22. Luke 19, verse 20 through 22. Now this is the King James, I think it has a parable of the pounds. I don't think it's the talents, I don't remember. But anyway, it's called the parable of the minas here. And a mina was about 3 months' salary. And it gives the example of giving them out. This is symbolic. "Then another came saying, 'Master, here is your mina, which I've kept put away in a handkerchief.'" Oh, he should have shut up right there. But, you know, shut up is not a good word to use. So my mother didn't allow me to use that. He should have ended his statement right there. But he goes on to say, "For I feared you, because you're an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow." And he said to him, "Out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow." So he says, you knew that. I'm going to judge you out of your own mouth. Now, we already heard, by our words, we will be justified, and by our words, we'll be condemned. Jesus Christ, who has a perfect memory, knows everything you and I have ever said. And He's judging us. And He is a good enough judge that He can take something that you and I have said, and we will hear it repeated back to us in the judgment. Now, there are some things I have said that I would like to hear. And there are some things that I have said that I would definitely not want to hear in the judgment. So it is for me to repent of everything I wouldn't want to hear. And maybe to say some more things. You know, maybe all of us need to tell God how much we want to be in His kingdom. And how much we want to serve Him. And how much we want to obey. And asking Him to forgive all of our mistakes. And guide us. And let us always be obedient forever and ever. "Every day I will praise you," the psalmist said. And every day goes on forever. So maybe there's some things we want to say and we would like to hear in the judgment. But you know, we don't get to choose which things we get to hear that we have said. But it will be something that you have said that you will hear in the judgment. Doesn't it mean we ought to be very, very careful about our idle words or any words? Or any words. Think about that. What basic rules govern speaking? Well, the book of James has a lot. James chapter 1, verse 19. James chapter 1. And verse 19. There's a lot in this book, first three chapters especially. so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Now, my sermon is not about wrath. Oftentimes, the things that we certainly would wish we could take back. Now, how often is it you say something and, oh, you wish you could take it back? But it often happens when we're angry. And we say something we wish we had never said. But it says, be swift to hear, slow to speak. You know, I suppose analyzing it, now I have to stand up here and give a sermon. And I try to cut it off at least by an hour. I set the stopwatch. But I'm required to give sermons. That's part of the job that God has given me. But otherwise, I have to think, do I dominate conversations? You might ask yourself, that in a conversation, am I the one who does most of the talking? I mean, I know that, and I'll pick on Little Rock, Arkansas. When we lived in Little Rock, we were there for 9 years. Now, there are just some people who can talk your ear off, talk your head off. And there happened to be four women in the church. Now, there are men who can talk your head off. But it just so happened that in Little Rock, it was four women. And this is back before mobile phones. And I would come home. And there was Lucretia. Now, Lucretia at that time had four children at home. And she was cooking and cleaning and washing, trying to keep up with a family of six people. Now, if you have more than four kids, you'd say, that's not much. But if you have less, you really don't know. So she was trying to keep up with four children and keep us all fed and clothed and the house clean, and she was busy, 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 busy. And I'd come home, and there she was on the phone. And she pretty much wasn't saying anything. Every now and then it was, uh-huh, uh-huh. Now, let me give honor to my precious, lovely wife. She could have said, because probably the person who called and said, is Mr. Keller's there? And she said, no, he's not here right now. So then they went in, and I knew it would be one of those four women if I came home and she was saying nothing. And it might be that she, even after I got home, she'd be on the phone for an hour or so. And at any time, she could have said, Fred's home now. But she didn't say it because she knew that I would hear everything she had already heard, all repeated over again. So she didn't even say, Fred's home now. She just, And then she'd say, well, I'll tell him. And after she had hang up, she could usually tell me the whole story in 2 or 3 minutes. I mean, that's all it took to let me know what the problem was, something I needed to pray for. But you think about it, I have known of people who have said, we will never invite so-and-so to our house again. You know, maybe somebody who came over for a night to be much observed or a social or something said, because this person would not let anybody else talk. It was all about him or her, and it just went on and on and on and on and on. Now, all of us need to analyze. I mean, there are moments where I will be loquacious, and then I'll think, that's too much talking. Shut up. Even my wife has said on occasion, we were in Africa. I don't know what hit me, but we were traveling between Togo and Ghana, and Henry Akins was driving, and I just talked, and Lucretia reminded me, what are you doing? What's this talk business? So I thought about it. That's true, I did. I don't know. I was just catching up for lost time. But, you know, analyze yourself when you're in a group. Am I swift to hear? Sometimes it's hard to finish your sentence. I have gotten to where there's some TV shows I just find myself, I can't enjoy them because they're constantly interrupting each other. They're not swift to hear, they are really swift to speak. And I think, I would never go on one of those shows. Never! Because you can't finish your thought. And I'm sitting there thinking, I wanted to hear what that person had to say. But they just constantly interrupt. They're all swift to speak, slow to hear. And you and I must be different. It's not uncommon for people, they're just waiting for you to pause. You know, if you're trying to express something, if you pause and take a breath, that's it. You've finished. The point you were trying to make, give up on it. But let's think about that. All of us need to think about it. Me, you. James chapter 1 verse 26. By the way, I will bring this out. Sometimes people wonder why people avoid them at church. I've had people ask me that. And I've wondered what to say. Because I know the reason. I usually just remain silent and think, well, I'd like to tell this person, but this person also gets very offended. But the reason people have said, well, I bypass so-and-so because I know if I talk to him or her, that's the last person I'm going to talk to because I will not be free to go around fellowship. I won't ask how many of you have had that kind of that there are people you avoid because you want to talk to them, but you don't want to have the entire time before or after services with just one individual. Or a half hour listening to that one individual. Maybe there's somebody you needed to see, but you can't get to them because you were caught. So all of us need to make sure we're not doing that. Now, if I stepped on any toes, I hope it's every toe in here that all of us are thinking, you know, I need to make sure I'm not someone that just, you know, is a big talker. Let me just say this. I may have told you this before, when I graduated from high school, you know they have what is called senior superlatives? Have I ever told you this story? You know, most likely to succeed, friendliest, you know, kindest or whatever. And I ended up with, surprise to me, two senior superlatives. Now, I did not get most likely to succeed. I got two. Wittiest, which surprised me, because I thought there were a lot of really witty people in my senior class. But the other one I'm not so proud of, it was most talkative. So I have tried to be a better listener. Lucretia, when I married her, she was very shy, but she hardly had anything to say to her husband. And one of the reasons is her husband was not a very good listener. And I have tried to be a better listener with Lucretia. To where I'm in the office, I'm working away, but look, if she comes to the door to tell me something, if it's important to her, then it should be important to me. And I will turn and listen. And I find she is much more open and likely to express herself, let me know what's going on in her life, what she's thinking about, what she saw on TV that interested her that she wanted to tell me. Fine. I want to hear it. And trying to be a better listener. In James chapter 2, I didn't read James 1 verse 26, did I? Sorry. Got to talking. If anyone among you thinks he is religious, keeps the Sabbath, keeps the holy days, tithes, doesn't commit adultery, doesn't steal. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Imagine that. Someone thinks he's religious. If someone thinks he's religious, I would think this is someone who does keep the Sabbath, does tithe, does keep the feast days. But if he doesn't bridle his tongue, what is he doing? Just deceiving his own heart. This one's religion is useless. Every Sabbath kept, every feast day kept is useless. What a thought. What a thought. Chapter 2, verse 10. Chapter 2 and verse 10. I'll tell you the sermon I was thinking of giving today. Was going to work on. Never really got a chance. The opposite of organization is disorganization. I got to thinking about all the places in the Bible that show God is a God of organization. God is a God who believes in, how many examples of the angels singing in the book of Revelation and things that are done are the result of organization, and the New Testament church. Oh, go back to Israel, organization. New Testament church, there was organization. And we've often stated, we are not. God's church is not an organization. It's an organism. And I agree with that. But this organism should be organized. And there are people today who are, you know, all spectrums in the attending church or churches, organizations, all the way from one person rule, all the way down to people who believe absolutely no organization, no rule. And you have that in the world, don't you? So you have all the way from people who want a monarch, one person totally in charge, or if you're in the United States, the president should be a really strong presidency, to people who believe in libertarians or even anarchists. And we have people who are religiously like that. And I wanted to go through some of the examples in the Bible. Maybe we can do that someday. Of where it shows organization, that it wasn't loose, but on the other hand, the only king was Jesus Christ. So, and they were unified into an organization. It wasn't a organization where they went down and incorporated. They didn't do that back then, but you see, there was an organized unity that God wanted. Everybody has to make their own judgment based on verses, Scripture. Anyway, James chapter 2, verse 10. James chapter 2, verse 10. For whoever shall keep the whole law. That's what we're talking about. Sabbath, everything. And yet stumble in one point, he is guilty of all. And he mentions some of the laws in verse 11. But then he says, verse 12, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. And verse 13, for judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And the thought that I was thinking of here is getting down into actually looking at, you say, well, I kept the whole law. I kept everything. But so speak, and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. So it is also our words, speaking, that are important here in keeping God's law. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Chapter 3, verses 1 through 12. Verse 1 says, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body." You know, I did not choose to go into the ministry. I didn't ask for it. I was asked to go into the ministry. And none of the apostles asked to become apostles, but Jesus went around and chose them. And a lot of people choose to become teachers. Maybe that's good, but it is good that we have people who want to teach. But on the other hand, it's something to be very careful in, because teachers receive a stricter judgment. We all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man. You know what James is saying? The hardest thing in which we obey God is our tongue. It's very difficult. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man. And what that's telling me is there is no one who does not stumble in word, that hasn't stumbled in it. Able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. I'm going to move that out a little bit. Seems like I was getting a lot of pss, pss, like that. So, shouldn't be a problem. Is that okay? All right. Let me go back. The tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And something that can slip out of our mouth can just kindle terrible, terrible things. Husbands and wives will say something in a moment of upset that can carry on for years and years and years and years. And it shouldn't. It should be forgiven. But it's always, once it's out, it's hard to retract. Once it's out of the bottle. Verse 6, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by Gehenna," hell. Gehenna was the valley where they took the garbage and they burned it. And by analogy, he's saying this valley that pictures hell fire eventually to come, that will burn people up, is like set on fire by this valley of the sons of Hinnom, Gehenna. "For every creature of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed, has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue." That sounds impossible, doesn't it? But I do want to get to a verse that explains how we can tame the untamable. "It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." What a scary thing the tongue is. I would dare say that the tongue has destroyed more marriages than any other aspect of marriage. You say, well, people argue over finance and child rearing. No, but it's the tongue that's doing all of that. Instead of doing it in a gentle way. With it we bless our God and Father. And with it we curse men. Or say bad things about them. Who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Well, the answer is no. Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. So it's out of the heart, and if there's something evil coming out of our tongue, there's something evil in our heart. And the verse that I read later in the Psalms will show that. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 9 and 10. This is breaking into a thought, but it's understandable and clear as to what it's talking about. It really begins in verse 8, but just breaking in verse 9. Not returning evil for evil. Oh, that's difficult. I've mentioned to men, I've said, all right, if you go to your wife and you're angry, does that tend to work out very well? How does that work out for you? When you're angry and you go to your wife, you're angry about it. You know, it doesn't work out real well, does it? Usually what comes back is anger. Now, it shouldn't. Or wives, if you go to your husband, you're angry about something. Does that work out real well for you? Probably not. The Bible says a soft answer turns away wrath. But even when someone does come to you and they are upset or say something nasty about you, it says, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling. Now, I'll tell you what, that is the hard moment when someone comes to us and they're upset and they're angry and they're unfairly angry. They are misjudging us. And we haven't done anything. Oh, that is really the hard moment to stay calm. But on the contrary, blessing. How can you do that? How can you return a blessing when you've just been reviled? And evil has said about you. Knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. Now, he's not telling us something that's easy to do. He's telling us, he's already said the tongue is, you know, we saw in James, is impossible to control. That you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Well, all of us would love life, and all of us want good days. And what's the big thing he mentions first? You want life? You want good days? Control your tongue. Control your tongue. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 22 through 25. Ephesians. Ephesians 4, verse 22 through 25. And this is once again breaking into a thought. trying to not let this get too long. Verse 22, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lust, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Therefore, now if we're going to change, and we're going to be a new man or new woman, therefore, putting away lying, this is not a sermon about lying, but that's a major problem with the tongue. Major problem. They were talking about, did a study on lying, and they basically said, everybody lies. Everybody lies. That's what the study concluded. Everybody lies. The biggest liars they found, everybody lies, but the biggest ones were young men. The people who lied the least were older women. So, for ladies, it wasn't that older ladies didn't ever lie, it's just they lied less. But all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire which burns with brimstone. They didn't interview anybody in here, so they might have said, we have found a few who don't lie. I hope so. If you watch a Disney movie, 90% of the time, it's going to have witchcraft and lying. And the lying is not just the bad people. It's everybody. Everybody. All the good, usually the good people are the kids, the bad people are adults, and the good kids, they tell just as big a lie, but for a good purpose, see. Let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. And I'll just skip over the angry part and go to verse 29. Verse 29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification. Edification means to build up. Is what I say going to build up or tear down? That it may impart grace to the hearers. Be a graceful individual. Now, I was a man who attended church. He never became a member. Wasn't here in this church area anyway. And he may have attended here once. But he owned a business. And I don't know what brought it up, but he said, well, in his business, it was just all men who worked at his personal business. He said he didn't see any problem with using a lot of four-letter words. And just men. So he didn't explain what four-letter words he meant. I turn to this verse right here. I mean, the word corrupt here means rotten. They're rotten words. There are words that are rotten. They're not pleasant words. They're not words that my grandmother would have used, or your grandmother. Their course is another way to put it. It's what we generally call four-letter words. And I read this to him and I said, I don't want to offend anybody here, but this is what I told him. I said, can you imagine, and I didn't use the actual words, I just said blank, that Jesus in heaven, you're up there, there's Jesus, he's in the throne room with his Father, Michael has been gone for a while. He comes in and Jesus says, Michael, you old blankety blank, where the blank have you been? And he said, no, I don't think he would say that. I said, you're right. He wouldn't say it and we shouldn't be saying it. Now, I want you to know that my children learned four-letter words from me deliberately. In Friday night Bible study, I taught them the meaning of the S word.
And I said, you want to know, you're going to hear that when you go to school. This is before they went to school, some of them. But you're going to hear it at school. You know, I didn't want them to go to school and hear these words first. Oh, this is something Dad and Mom didn't tell me. So I told them the S word. Now, I said it out, and I said, you know what it means? Poop. That's it. That's all it means. Poop. But it's used in offensive ways, and you will offend people, generally, if you use it. But you're going to hear it at school. And then I told them the F word. Now, I taught them about sex and adultery, because the Bible commands to teach your children the law of God. And if you don't teach them about sex and what adultery is, and I explained how bad it was. I said, if I committed adultery, if I went out and had sex with another woman, our marriage would break up and Daddy and Mommy wouldn't be living together anymore. Would you like that? Oh, no, they wouldn't like that. I said, that's what happens. So I explained it to them, and I said the F word, and I said, it's talking about sex, which I've explained to you. In this manner, he said, teach your children about sex when they're so young that they still say, why would anyone want to do that? And I did. I taught, you know, and I've mentioned this before. I've asked here, and I've asked over in Murfreesboro, how many of you first learned about sex from your parents? In Murfreesboro, only one person raised her hand. It was my daughter, Debbie. I didn't learn about sex from my parents. And I dare say very few in this room learned about sex first heard about it from the parents. Because the parents saying, oh, they're too young to know about this. All right, you just waited. But see, I explained the F word too. Because I knew they were going to hear it. And I tell them it's talking about sex. But it's not talking about sex between a daddy and a mommy who are married. Because no man who is a polite individual would ever use that word about having sex with his wife. Now, I'm sure there are some crude men who have, but that's not normally done. So I explained it. And the reason I'm telling you is this, is there are some crude words out there. Now, I use the word shut up, which I don't usually use. My mom and dad would not allow us to use the word shut up. They were genteel South Carolinians. Lucretia came from Texas, where it was not considered all that bad. You know, Texas, why you shut up, boy? And of course, there's always, all through the South, there is why, shut your mouth. And now that's not actually telling somebody to shut up. That's just saying, wow, is that really something? That's exciting. How many of you were not allowed to use the word shut up in your house? Your parents didn't use it. Well, it's a minority. My parents never used it. Maybe I needed it. Maybe my parents needed to tell me that. But they didn't. They didn't use it. But anyway, using words that are offensive. That's the question. Let me just say that when I was in high school, I used offensive words not in front of mom and dad, but in front of other guys. If the girls could hear what guys say in locker rooms about girls, and they are objects, and their bodies have object parts that are used very offensively in most high school locker rooms. Back then, I went along with all the other guys. I was as cool as they were. I thought it was disgusting. It was disgusting. I did a lot of things when I was a teenage boy that were, said a lot of things that were truly disgusting. But God has called me and I have changed, and I don't want to use those things that are offensive. They are things that are just plain offensive to God. So he says, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, building up, that it may impart grace. Let me tell you, there are some words that do not impart grace. And we, as Christians, we know that Jesus Christ wouldn't use those things. We should not. And maybe it isn't a bad word, but just the way something is said
or the tone of voice. Verse 31. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Some of us grew up with short fuses. Didn't realize that's a sin. That's not right. Verse 32, and be kind to one another. Let me go on to chapter 5, Ephesians 5 and verse 4. And this is breaking into a thought again. Neither filthiness nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting. Now, I like the fact that it says coarse jesting. There is coarse jesting. And there are some things just should not be said. They're coarse. One thing is, the Bible says in Proverbs, I won't get to Proverbs, there are a lot of Proverbs about the tongue, but one of them says, only fools mock at sin. Fools mock at sin. You know, I joke, I laugh, but the one thing you've not heard me do is make fun of and joke about sin. I don't tell jokes about the traveling salesman and the farmer's daughter and such as that. I have told jokes about Super Rooster. All right, roosters don't sin. You know, Super Roosters don't sin. I have told jokes about a couple getting married on their wedding night. That was not, you know, there are some actual funny things that have happened on wedding nights. Probably folks right here could tell us some things that are very funny on their, it happened on their wedding night, but very likely the wife would not want it told and such. I mean, funny things have happened at weddings, right? You see these on videos all the time. Well, I would suspect that on wedding nights, especially, and I'm speaking of where you're talking about two people who have lived their life right. They're both virgins, and this is a new experience to them. I won't tell you what happens on our wedding night. Lucretia would have me in the doghouse for sure. But there are some funny things. But you know, it's making fun of sin that is not funny. Fools. What did I say? Chapter Proverbs 14, verse 9. Fools mock at sin. Those are not funny things. Let me tell you, adultery has led to terrible things. Homes have been broken up. Children have been left in broken homes. Is that funny? I don't think so. I know it isn't. Sin is not funny. So, those are things that we need to think of when we are, when we're speaking. Coarse jesting, it says, neither filthiness nor foolish talking nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. I know, I grew up with coarse jesting. That's what you hear in the boys' locker room. I quit listening to the, I used to stay, now I fall asleep before the, I usually fall asleep before the 10 o'clock news. But I used to stay up and would listen to Jay Leno, but it just got so coarse that I could not continue watching. They're movies. It's just coarse. I watched Seinfeld for a little bit, and after a while I'd turn it off because it's making fun of sin. And it's coarse jesting. Sin is coarse. Period. I'm not saying it wasn't funny, I'm just saying it was coarse. Now I want to turn to Psalm 141. Psalm 141. And verses 3 and 4. I have on occasion opened up the Bible to Psalm 141 and read this to God.
I grew up a liar. It's so easy to let a lie slip out, or if not a lie, something that is a half-truth, like Abraham had. It's so easy. Say, well, I didn't want to tell this person something. Well, then just don't talk. Be quiet. Psalm 141, starting in verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. That's a prayer that I need to make and do make regularly. Because only Jesus Christ can help me to control my tongue. Only Jesus Christ. We already read in the book of James that it's an unruly evil. No man can tame it. Though there is one man that obviously James did not mean. And that was his older brother, Jesus Christ, who did control his tongue. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Now, we already read that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So he adds this in verse 4. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men who work iniquity, and do not let me eat of their delicacies. Well, the part, main part is, do not incline my heart to any evil thing. If God, through Jesus Christ and through the Spirit, changes our hearts, then our tongues can edify and bring grace to the hearers. And I have said things I wish I had never said. You have. I've not reached perfection yet. You haven't. So this is a regular prayer that we need to pray. Husbands and wives need Jesus Christ to guide their tongue. Pastors, men who speak, every last soul in here. That's old enough to understand and changing and growing. I'm not talking about little babies. Needs Jesus Christ. All of you need. The older ladies who perhaps, according to studies, have less of a problem, still can have something slip out that they wish they'd never said. And they need Jesus Christ. Of course, it did say no man can tame. Didn't say no woman could tame, but I think most of the women here would realize that they need Jesus Christ to control their tongue and their heart. Both. Some ladies, not you personally, but can be catty. Not you, but you know of other ladies who can, right? Who can be catty. So I bring it up not to step on your toes. Men can do the same thing, it's just not called catty when they do it. So that's a very important scripture to read, to have in your mind, in your heart. I'll tell you what, that's not been an hour, and I have a bunch of Proverbs here. I'll tell you what, let me just read Revelation chapter 14, verse 5. We'll end with chapter 14, verse 5. Revelation 14, and verse 5, this is speaking of the 144,000. And this is a promise. How nice. These are people that we presume are in the Spirit by now. And when we are in God's, when we are made of the Spirit of God, we will not have this fight with our tongue. How pleasant to know that in the kingdom, our tongue will not be an unruly evil. Because it says of these 144,000, not that you and I are there, but we will be spirit as they will be. And in their mouth was found no deceit. No deceit. Or Or falsehood it could be. The word could be falsehood. For they are without fault before the throne of God. Well, we look forward to that day.